This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
In 1852, a paper called The Spirit Messenger told people new to spiritualism how to hold their very own seance. Ooh, right? Okay, let's get some seance music going, huh? Nice. Okay. A seance, or a spirit circle, requires this of the sitter, according to the publication. Quote, "First, let none join your circle but those who feel attracted. Invite none but those who feel a desire to search for truth and would be congenial with you. Second, when you have a medium present, communications are promised conditionally. If you come with candid minds and a desire to know the truth, the spirits will endeavor to communicate with you. Third, let one among you be appointed to repeat the alphabet. Fourth, your meetings should be opened with singing and close with singing. And all should pray, cherishing an inward desire to have good spirits with you, or those who are the most progressed. Fifth, in the absence of a medium, the circle should be formed with the same harmonious feelings, and the spirits be with you and impress with truthful thoughts. Sixth, those who unite with the circle must not indulge in inharmonious feelings, strife, or bitterness, but follow the example of Christ in doing good. Seventh, all strive to live cheerful or happy, and there will be a corresponding harmony between you and the spheres," unquote. Now, obviously, the mid-19th century wasn't the first time that people had tried to make contact with the dead in human history. They had been at it for centuries. Ancient mythology and history is full of accounts of contact with the dead through necromancy, which shares qualities of the seance, but is not the seance. Necromancy, unlike the mediums who were inspired by the Fox Sisters of Hydesville, New York in the 1840s, often involved violence in its early history, featuring a combination of ritualized words, spells, if you will, and an action, often a sacrifice. Necromancy appears in some of the most famous early stories we have, so just kick it back to your middle school brain for a second and think of Odysseus, who talks to a witch who is able to conjure the spirit of a crewman and Odysseus's mother and even the mythic hero Hercules for him to get advice. And yes, they all drink the blood of a sheep. It's a whole thing. Orpheus's whole story involves going down to the spirit world to rescue his wife from the underworld. And Hercules himself goes down there too. In ancient Rome, the stories were even louder and more violent. One of my favorites is when a witch screams, "Do I ever chant these spells without consuming human entrails?" Incredible energy. Let's bring that back. Some Roman emperors actually employed necromancers, most notably Emperor Nero, which is interesting because I feel like he was a pretty chill guy otherwise. There's also records of necromancy in Celtic history and myths. It is featured throughout the Middle Ages in early Christianity, where some of the earliest cautionary tales exist. One that comes right to mind is King Saul outlawing the practice of necromancy and then seeking out a spirit guide anyways, an action that leads to the loss of a huge battle as well as the life of him and his son. These appear alongside good Christian ghosts, which are different for reasons. I mean, Easter, ghost holiday, canonically. There's actually a lot of ghost holidays. There is Dia de los Muertos in Mexico, Samhain in the Celtic tradition, the Hungry Ghost Festival or Yulan in China, Obon in the Japanese Buddhist tradition, Yade in Haiti, or Easter, where Jesus is famously dead. But there's one important element that distinguishes the seance from virtually all of these holidays and many of these myths. In these holidays, the ghosts come to us. We're on their schedule. In a seance, we are the ones calling them. In these stories, the person who seeks out contact with the dead for their own personal comfort, as opposed to the interest of others or to serve their own god, are usually punished. In seances, that's the whole point. It's a small distinction, but an important one. The seance, as spiritualists use it, was one of the first major innovations of the faith, but the history of spiritualist rituals came to be so much more, some of which has fallen by the wayside, and other practices that are still used in Casadega today. Today is all about turning it up to an 11. We're going to go to Casadega to check out the classic spiritualist ritual of table tipping and check in with the Fox sisters who invented the practice of the seance on their first national tour and see what happened during their first brush with public backlash. So, okay, we're starting our seance now. Let's get this going. Step three, let's get singing. Somebody once told me the world is... Just kidding, start the theme song. Alright, I'm back in Casadega, Florida, and I'm waiting for a friend. Yeah, I have friends. I'm walking around looking for snacks, of which there are none to be found. But on my walk around the neighborhood, I do spot this beautiful candy-colored lavender house with four bedrooms and a small gazebo on sale for a kind of stunningly reasonable price. But it's a non-starter. You need the approval of the Southern Casadega Spiritualist Camp to live there due to its status as a protected official campground's home. This approval process is referenced extensively on the Casadega, Florida and Lilydale, New York websites. Sure, you can live in a gorgeous house for a low price, but you first need to prove that you are worthy and involved with the community. And in a move that is a little exclusionary but makes sense to me in the circumstances, mediums who have completed the equivalent of a 3 or more year university course / unpaid internship to live there will get preference. But I let myself have the fantasy for a minute anyways. A friend and I come down to Casadega. We learn to commune with the dead. We live a minute's walk from a gorgeous public park and community, and well, I guess we would need to get a car because the only place to get food in all of Casadega is a place called Sinatra's Ristorante, and it's open 5 days out of the week. But the air here smells so fresh, and it's a tempting idea, but To quote the man who I am taking today's table tipping class from, the Reverend Doctor, I know, another Reverend Doctor, the Reverend Doctor Lewis Gates, he will say to me in a reading I get from him a couple days later,
"You have no business in Florida."
Okay, he's probably right, but that's a little harsh. But I don't know he's going to say that yet. At this point, Reverend Dr. Lewis Gates is little more than a name on a website to me. But unlike most reverends and mediums at the camp, he's got deep roots here. He's a third-generation medium, raised by a medium mother and a Baptist priest's father, and he'll tell us that he still uses the deck of tarot cards that belonged to his grandmother. Now, one of the defining traits of modern spiritualism is its seemingly intentional lack of central figure, but for my money, if Casadega at present has one defining figure, it appears to be Reverend Dr. Lewis. He's virtually everywhere during my time there. He's at services, he's doing healings, he's headlining the message service, as it were. He's going on walks. He's attending services he's not even technically participating in. And he's got a big personality. He's a real animated guy, and probably the best candidate to show us how tables can connect us with the spirit realm, both because he has a lot of experience and because he has this unique ability to sell a group of people, mostly new to the religion of spiritualism, on one of its more esoteric experiences. Another of these more obscure ideas that he specializes in that I find particularly fascinating is trance mediumship, a form of mental mediumship where a spirit communicates through a medium using their own voice and mannerisms. Reverend Dr. Lewis writes on his website about a spirit that he channels most often, whose name is Lucerne, who he identifies as, quote, being from another dimension, unquote. Lucerne started coming to him many years ago. So for comparison, Reverend Dr. Lewis Gates sounds like this.
We have a fear of leaving people behind, leaving our life behind, our vibration, who we are. The fear kind of what we're going to see when we open our eyes on the other side.
And Lucerne sounds like this.
When you exit the spirit world to come here, you pick your place in the city and state of your birth, or the city and country of your birth.
My kingdom for a single meeting with Lucerne. But unfortunately, Lucerne is not making an appearance in Casadega today. Instead, my friend and I are taking a class in the Reverend Dr. Lewis's physical mediumship through table tipping. My friend is from Orlando, about a half hour away, and she is coming in completely cold. So buckle in. Right away, she has this combination of wonder and conviction about how the world works that is fascinating to me. I've never actually met this friend in real life before. We met around 6 months ago through unionization efforts for podcasters, which, listener, let me tell you, worked out, unionize your workplace. But this is the first time we've actually met in a time where I sometimes forget that I haven't met people in person in a while. She parks in front of the bookstore and doesn't know whether to comment on how bizarre it is that this place exists so close to where she grew up, or to just kind of take in the experience. She starts by telling me that I'm so much taller than she thought, which is something I get a lot. You know, "Jamie, I didn't expect you to be this tall." Well, guess what? I'm 6 feet tall and my personality is a hard 5'6". All right, I don't have to disclose that to you. Nice to meet you too. She comes into the gift shop with me as the class is about to start and immediately picks up on one of the more obvious and polarizing aspects of Casadega and of American spiritualism on the whole. It's extremely white. She says, quote, "What is this? Is this white people culture?" I look around nervously, already feeling like my most recent encounter with the spiritualists had left me a bit at a disadvantage. My goal for today is to be here, be present, try not to piss anyone off, and show that I'm genuinely interested so that the board of spiritualists who control public relations don't tell me to go fuck myself. But it feels weird. So I lean over to my friend and I tell her, I don't really know what table tipping is, but surely Reverend Dr. Lewis is going to tell us what it is at the beginning of the 2-hour table tipping session, right? I notice a few things about the Andrew Jackson Davis educational room that I didn't at the message service earlier in the day, particularly this one poster-sized papyrus font graphic reading Proclamation beneath Casadega's signature sunflower logo. Everything is significant here, and so it stands to reason that the sunflower is as well. I wasn't able to trace the history of who decided that the sunflower was the symbol of the spiritualists, but it's one that is always symboled constancy and can be found on nearly every branded item in the camp. There's maybe about 40 people at the afternoon table tipping class. Our chairs are surrounding Reverend Dr. Lewis Gates and his fellow Casadega medium and spouse, Marie Gates. They stand in the center of the meeting room with 3 tables of various sizes, all of which have 3 legs. I'm about to learn way more about the other people in this room than I thought I was going to. Within minutes, I will know that there's a man whose father had died just weeks before, who he was desperate to make contact with in spite of his disbelief in the great beyond. I would learn about the old woman who comes every time this workshop is held in an attempt to make contact with her dead pets. I would meet the Casadega regulars who want to say hello to their dead relatives that they speak to on the tables all the time. I'd meet the curious goth girls making a day trip together after the first one of them got their driver's license. The German tourist girls on a semester abroad who get scared and leave in the middle. The middle-aged women who are there to support their friend as she embarks on the goal of becoming a medium and maybe going to night class, question mark? And I'm there with my friend, too. So let me give you a feel for Lewis and Marie Gates. He wears a Hawaiian shirt, more casual than the Sunday dressing of just an hour before. And Marie, who grew up as a Quaker, and I later notice, walks several footsteps behind her husband on their morning walks as they take their cat around in a stroller. Iconic. Love that for them. They both have very distinct personalities. His is booming and hers is observational and, at a few choice points, a little quietly sarcastic towards her husband. They act as if we all know exactly what table tipping is, which is a huge mistake if the confused faces of most of the people in the room are any indication. But they banter like a married couple because they are a married couple. Here's Lewis Gates being introduced at a Sunday service in Casadega the week after I left by Marie, at a service where, because of Valentine's Day, a number of spiritualists had just renewed their wedding vows.
At this time, I would like to bring up our pastor, Reverend Dr. Lewis Gates, pastor, medium, healer, teacher, and awesome husband. Yeah.
I want to speak today about our commitment to each other, our commitment to the universe, our commitment to our own being within our lives. And a lot of times we forget ourselves as we move into different situations. Today, we committed our connection to the individual that we married as our renewal of vows. Again, we had a few connect to their higher connection to themselves. But we always have to realize that we have to nurture our being in this lifetime. We have to nurture ourselves. We have to connect ourselves to this higher sense of consciousness.
So yeah, they're a team, and they practice out of the same building around the corner. But today, we are table tipping, and they get right into it without explaining to you what the fuck is going on. This seems to be the general practice in the area, though, these assumptions that you understand what's happening. Things like, yes, spirit is real. Yes, you're going to talk to the spirit. Yes, right now. Okay, let's go. Oh, this table? Yeah, it's made with the house of George Colby, the man who founded Casadega. Yes, of course his house burned down, and of course we retrofitted the banister into a table. What question could you possibly have? It's your turn. We hope you thought about who you wanted to hear from the great beyond before you arrived. Lewis does do us the service of introducing the three tables he's brought with him. One is a pretty small coffee table that falls far below his, I would say, about 6'5" frame. One is a medium-sized TV dinner table that your grandma would set her coffee on between episodes of soap operas. And then there's this larger table, this pale blue George Colby table that we'll be using today. One that has been made specifically to Lewis Gates's body specifications, and which his wife Marie can make work as well, as in use the table to get in touch with the ghosts. He says this of the George Colby table, where I, in just a couple of minutes, will be speaking with my dead brother.
I need one so I don't have to stoop down, you know?
Lewis Gates gave a speech at Gala Day in Casadega just the day before about an equally esoteric spiritualist practice called spirit trumpets. Essentially, an older spiritualist tradition in which spirits will make instruments move and play. Today, he tells us that the tables for table tipping need to have three legs for the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Something about three legs just works, he says, and that any table will do, but the bigger, bulkier ones are his personal preference. He says that he's blessed the space before we entered. This involves his saying a prayer in each corner of the room to clear negative energy, and being the one who said the prayer automatically makes him the alpha of the workshop. He is responsible for our spiritual safety. Rooms can hold on to energy, positive and negative, he explains to us, so you have to be very careful. He uses the example of the way that you can enter a space where something horrible has happened and you can somehow just feel it, feel that something isn't right. Or, to borrow an example of the room that we're currently standing in, a hall where there were fundraising dances during both world wars and where mediums say they can hear music and joyful footsteps while they're on nighttime walks. It's not that these spirits are haunting the space, he tells us. It's the energy of the event and things that happened there, which means that my virginity is haunting a dirty hotel room in Annapolis, Maryland. Actually, if you apply this rule to any hotel room, they become uninhabitable. Anyways, Reverend Dr. Lewis says this,
I've been doing this since I was 5 years old. It took me years to get in touch with all of this.
He says this with the swagger I'll come to associate him with as he introduces the tables, saying it takes years of practice to get them to quote-unquote fly the way they do for him. Hell, he says, even Marie has trouble getting the tables going sometimes. Sometimes their own cat has more success getting the table to move than Marie. And it's like, geez, man, she's standing right there. After all, Reverend Dr. Lewis explains, he's been practicing mediumship to some degree for over half a century, one of the only people at the camp to be a generational member of spiritualism. Yes, he says, he's seen tables levitate. Yes, he says, he hears the tables rattle around he and Marie's house at night. He points to one table and says, he found it rattling in the back of an antique store, and the dealer said, I don't like that table, something's not right with it. And so Reverend Dr. Lewis bought it because it was jumping out at him. He's got the kind of charisma that makes you glad that spiritualism has no interest in being a cult, because this guy could sell a cult, the same way that the early spiritualists of the 1800s could sell the religion. But we'll get back to them.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep experts. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Now that we've met the tables, the table tipping class begins. Reverend Dr. Lewis asks for six people to get up. They do and get around the big wooden table with Lewis and Marie, and everyone is instructed to put their hands on the edges of the table, very lightly, no grip. The rest of us stay on the perimeter of the circle in our chairs as the group of six begin to move the table around the interior of the room. And I don't know what to tell you. After a second, the table, which is huge, does begin to move. And it seems to kind of take the eight people surrounding it to the left side of the circle we've created, as the less initiated, like myself and my friend, look on kind of in bafflement. Now, I want to be clear, this isn't a table moving as in levitating. This isn't a Conjuring movie. It's not this.
What's going on?
Ladies, please remove your gloves.
I believe we're about to commune with the spirit.
His lips are red like blood from a coot when you took her. His teeth are sharp like yours when you bit her coot. And it's so cold and dark and wet like the jungle, like tears. I am crying. I am so afraid, Father. Find me. Find me. Save me. Save me. Yonde moto kogi ko sungarangai. Datarangai. Sungarangai.
That was a clip from Penny Dreadful.
But it is a table dragging across the floor, not lifting, but moving quickly and not appearing to be pulled by anyone in particular. And for skeptics listening, I promised to take this class seriously, but of course I'm watching Lewis and Marie's forearms to make sure that they're not flexing with every movement that the table makes. And it doesn't look that way, but okay, they're both wearing long sleeves, and maybe I'll have a better idea when my turn around the table comes. For now, all I know is that the six, not Gateses, are chasing the table around as it lifts towards its first victim, a woman who has been here before. So once the table stops, it tends to tip towards one person, and it sways back in this jerky, seasick kind of way while it waits to make contact. So Reverend Dr. Lewis nods at the woman the table is tipping towards, saying,
"That's you, sweetheart."
And what takes place is this stressful game of yes or no questions that happens rapid fire. She's a little nervous, but she tries an easy question. Is this spirit a man? The table goes still. Its legs go back on the ground. That means no. Is this spirit a woman? The table leans towards her. Yes. That means yes. Okay. Is it her mother? No. She thinks harder. The other five people around the table are looking at her intently. There is this kind of pressure to perform when the table is talking to you. If you lose the rhythm of the thing, it gets less exciting. So the woman thinks fast. She says, "Is this her biological mother?" Interesting. Now everyone in the room knows that she's adopted. The table says, "Yes, yes." It's rocking back and forth. That's it, biological mother. So the woman nods as Lewis and Marie keep staring at her, as if to say, "What question are you going to ask now?" The woman gets nervous.
"Ask her a question."
So the woman asks the spirit, "Are you okay?" And the table rocks back and forth. "Yes." The woman says, "I love you." And the table tips towards her slowly. Lewis says,
"That's a hug."
And this woman, who is talking to her biological mother via table, says a little awkwardly, "Oh, thanks." And the table, as if sensing that things are starting to get weird, goes still. Everyone in the room takes a breath. Was that it? Is that all there is to a tipping table? And after a second, the table takes off again. It moves to the left. This big fucking Ouija board. And the group of six starts to follow it again. And it starts all over. My friend looks over at me, a little confused. She mouths to me, "Was that real?" And as I sit here, I feel more skeptical than I was wanting to. It all feels a little forced and performative. But I'm not here to decide if ghosts are real. I'm here to watch other people decide if they think ghosts are real. Many of the table tipping interactions are similar to this first one. There are people who are a little nervous and struggle to think of questions. There are people who end up connecting with a spirit other than the one they had clearly been hoping to. There are skeptics that were brought with believers who are only taking it half seriously and kind of slowing down the proceedings. And there's a million, "Hi, Grandma, miss yous." But like the message service that took place before it, there are moments around the table that are extremely intense and even pull tears from people who came here to talk to someone who they loved and lost. Table tipping is something of a rarity in Casadega and in modern spiritualism in general, and it makes sense that a legacy spiritualist like Reverend Dr. Lewis Gates is the one to show it to us. By and large, physical mediumship like table tipping and spirit trumpets have been abandoned by spiritualists over the years, with the majority of mediums' readings in Casadega now being done intuitively, or only with the mind. I mentioned this in our first episode, but because there is such a misconception on this topic, even within Casadega, mediums trained in Casadega, Florida, do not use tarot cards and rarely use physical tools at all. It's not that they're banned by any means. I mean, you can take an occasional table tipping class like this. There are things like spirit photography walking tours marketed mainly at tourists that encourage you to walk around with a camp-sanctioned guide and capture orbs on camera. But these events are in the minority, and Casadega mediums have actively distanced themselves from the tarot card readers who operate in the camp, particularly the ones who work at the Casadega Hotel, where I'm staying. That's a drama for another day. But one reason that spiritualists on the whole seem to have distanced themselves from larger physical demonstrations over the years may have to do with the extreme controversy that surrounds some debunked methods of the 19th century spiritualists. Again, that dichotomy. In the world of seances in the 19th century, there was often this demand for more, more contact, more proof of life after death, a demand that pushed early practices like spirit wrappings and table tipping even further towards things like quote-unquote spirit hands that sitters could touch from the beyond, full-on body materializations, levitation, spirit photography, ectoplasmic mouth ejaculate. I can't talk to you about that right now. That's gonna have to wait, but it's as gross as it sounds. But the more theatrical of a presentation generally, the swifter it would be debunked by skeptics. And so to protect their own religion and beliefs, most mediums today elect to tap into spirit using their minds and no clunky objects. That is to say, it's interestingly old school that Reverend Dr. Lewis Gates does teach physical mediumship as he does, and also engages in trance mediumship, because these tend to be the elements of spiritualism that draw far more skepticism. Here's a quick smattering of early examples of physical mediums getting debunked.
These examples come from Barbara Weisberg's biography of the Fox Sisters Talking to the Dead, as well as the book Calling the Spirits, A History of Seances by Lisa Morton.
Early spiritualists Ira and William Davenport, the teen seancers I call them, began as stage magicians before pivoting to spiritualist seances, where they were eventually caught performing tricks with elaborate spirit cabinets, where they'd be tied up and shoved inside only for quote-unquote spirits to begin playing musical instruments while they were. While Ira was said to be a practicing spiritualist, he also sat Harry Houdini down and showed him how he and his brother pulled off the spirit cabinet illusion shortly before he died. Next up, one of history's most famous mediums, the Scotsman D.D. Holm, who is often referred to as a medium who never got busted, an impressive figure who is said to be able to levitate and produce physical manifestations of spirits. And he never was publicly exposed, for sure, but there were several rumors and accounts that detailed things like a found fake spirit hand, or in a well-circulated rumor about a seance attended by writers Robert and Elizabeth Browning, a glowing appendage in the dark was grabbed by Robert Browning and revealed to be Holmes' own foot. And finally, the first popular spirit photographer, William Mumler, who was brought to court for fraud. Although, to his credit, after 3 weeks of testimony, including P.T. Barnum testifying against him, that's really saying something, no one could definitively show how Mumler had created the spirit photographs, and so he went on to take one of the most famous of all time, one of Mary Todd Lincoln and what appears to be the spirit of her assassinated husband. Maybe you've heard of him.
Now, some of what I just described still does remain in the murky world of allegation.
So, physical mediumship, whether you believe in it or not, it's riskier. Just because there were smoke and mirrors demonstrably at play in the examples I just gave doesn't necessarily mean that the people doing it didn't believe or didn't think that these things weren't possible. I mean, does the priest in a confession box really believe that they are providing divine forgiveness? Probably not always, but often. When it comes to things like this, literal magic tricks, a wet glove, a slipped knot to play spirit instruments, I mean, it's very hard to defend. But some accusations of fraud are more difficult to parse. And I also include the Fox Sisters, who we are overdue to check in on. So let's go back to the late 1840s. After becoming locally famous in upstate New York for spirit wrappings in their own home, said to be from a famous murdered shoe peddler named Charles Rosna, the sisters Maggie and Kate Fox, both still children, moved to the city of Rochester with her older sister, Leah, herself a single mother, to begin the process of becoming public religious figures. I mean, can you blame a kid for wanting to? So, where do we leave our gals, the Fox sisters? Oh, right. Per their account, they're having the shit slapped out of them by the ghosts of Rochester in the summer of 1848. I mean, my God. The way that Leah Fox, the eldest, describes Slappy the Ghost, my nickname, not hers, I will not give her credit for my amazing ghost nickname, but the way that she describes this malevolent spirit in her book, The Missing Link, is very intense. The youngest sister, Kate Fox, was in particular targeted and tormented, at one point appearing to be slapped to the point that she was unconscious, only to come to reciting poetry saying, "To be with Christ is better far." This stage of the Fox sisters' lives is extremely difficult to verify, in part because the presence of spirit in the world, like all things I become hyperfixated on, tends to be pretty difficult to speak of with any sort of objectivity. I firmly believe that this is a topic that's almost impossible to come at with any clear sort of mind, because a person's perspective on the afterlife is usually connected to deeply personal parts of themselves, how they grew up, their relationship or lack thereof with faith, people that they've lost, and the people that they've lost's beliefs. I will say that Leah Fox's accounts in particular are tough for me. She functioned not only as a Fox medium during her career, seriously, just give her a year or so, but Leah also worked in the unofficial capacity of Maggie and Kate's manager, part-time guardian, and family myth maker who would soon be taking their show on the road. Like a book of letters that Maggie would publish later in her life, the contents of Leah's book was heavily contested by her own sisters later in their lives, as the relationship between the three of Margaret Fox's daughters exploded both their personal lives and their religion in a very public way. A moment for Leah here. Barbara Weisberg does an amazing job in her biography of Maggie and Kate Fox of showing all sides of their sister Leah, including the hard-to-deal-with sides. In her day, Leah would be considered some sort of saintly mother figure in the spiritualist movement, as the public opinion of her younger sisters tended to wildly fluctuate as their lives went on. But there's indication pretty early on of Leah having some volatile tendencies. One example in particular stands out regarding how Leah treated her own daughter in these early months of spiritualism. A local man hoping to make contact with his daughter, who was thought to have been murdered by her own husband, but whose killer was acquitted, met with Maggie, Kate, Leah, and Leah's teenage daughter, Lizzie, for a seance. So they conducted this early version of a seance with all the sisters present, but no spirit raps came, and Leah began to berate and blame her own daughter for the raps not materializing. Lizzie began to cry, and it became clear that she had expressed, after witnessing her niece Kate pass out, seemingly possessed by Slappy the Ghost, that she wished that the spirits would go away. Oh no, she said she didn't like when her 12-year-old niece was possessed. What a bitch. But in this public forum, Leah demanded that Lizzie apologize, humiliating her in front of her own family and strangers. And Lizzie sobbed, quote, "I was sincere, I don't know how to repent," unquote. Finally, she relented to her mother's verbal accosting and sunk to her knees and apologized to the spirits. And suddenly, the rapping began again. Shortly after, Leah sent Lizzie away to live with her father for over a year in Illinois. Banishing your teen daughter? Not very saintly behavior. The summer of 1848 found the Fox sisters slowly discovering their place within Rochester society. First by making an important connection through befriending influential couple Amy and Isaac Post. There's probably a whole other podcast to be had about these two. They were radical Quaker abolitionists and feminists, They held organizational meetings for local abolition advocates. They provided safe harbor for fugitive slaves after the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850 made it so that white Southerners could capture any black person on free soil and claim them as their slave. And the federal government played a much more active role in the recapturing of enslaved people. They were also close friends of Frederick Douglass, of Susan B. Anthony, of Sojourner Truth. And after realizing that the spiritualist kids who kept popping up in the news were actually kids from their own neighborhood, the Posts became some of the first true believers in the fledgling spiritualism religion. Like many early and subsequent adopters, it's likely that their willingness to give it a chance was, at least in part, motivated by the fact that they had lost a child in the past, one that they very much wanted to make contact with from beyond the grave. Maggie and Kate, still kids themselves, were more than happy to oblige. The summer of 1848 was huge in Rochester, New York. In July of that year, the girls lived a stone's throw from the Seneca Falls Convention, the first major women's rights convention in the United States history. Amy Post was in attendance, along with Frederick Douglass and Elizabeth Cady Stanton. I won't rehash the event for you here. There are plenty of places where it's been done far more effectively, and I will link them in the episode description. But the short story is that the Seneca Falls Convention kickstarted the first wave of American feminism, while laying bare the inequities within this movement, particularly between white women and women of color. But another topic whispered around this convention was that of spirit communication. The Fox sisters were not present at the Seneca Falls Convention, but they were sort of there in spirit. No, I can't. I'm bailing on the joke. The sisters, either in a move of smart networking or smart networking from spirit, were some of the first to predict that Frederick Douglass's newspaper, The North Star, would be a success. The first of many interactions with Douglass that indicate that while he wasn't a full convert to spiritualism, he was deeply interested in it and many of the people who supported it. Barbara Weisberg describes it like this in her biography of the Fox sisters, called Talking to the Dead. Quote, many of those in attendance, such as Frederick Douglass and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, had also heard about the possibility of spirit communication through their Rochester acquaintances, and others soon learned of it. Raps were reported to have struck the very table at which Stanton and her colleague, Lucretia Mott, had drafted the convention's resolutions, unquote. As it would for their entire career, the whiffs and accusations of humbug, as it were, followed talk of spiritualism wherever it went. But many progressives who were strong proponents of science were actually inclined to advocate for spiritualism in a time where it felt like, with some study and some time, anything could be proven as true. And in the late 1840s, negative press was no match for the public's curiosity in spirit communication, either in the interest of science or, as would be true time and time again into the very recent past, there was a lot of death and a lot of people that their grieving wanted to get in touch with. In addition to the normal culprits in a time where life expectancy still hovered somewhere around 40, a cholera epidemic swept Europe and the U.S. in 1849, bringing with it a new crowd of grieving who were eager for closure with relatives and loved ones they had suddenly lost. By the end of the decade, Kate, Maggie, and Leah were notorious communicators with spirit. In 1849, Leah had promoted herself from manager mommy to manager mommy medium, live, laugh, love. With some trademark Fox drama, the spirits are said to have threatened to leave the sisters permanently during the fall of 1849 if the sisters didn't comply with a very specific desire of spirits, that wish to take their show on the road. And after a little bit of rehearsal, they did just that. In November of 1849, the sisters performed in the largest theater in Rochester, New York, officially taking spiritualism to the next level. November 14th, 1849. Price of admittance, 25 cents. 50 cents admits one man and two ladies. Good to know. 400 people attend in all, including Amy Post, lending the event some bonus credibility. Kate Fox remained in the audience for the demonstration, which was attended by both the curious and the skeptical, and Maggie came on stage in a pale blue dress. In all likelihood, those in attendance would have had some familiarity with the concept of the supernatural outside of Christianity. There were well-known figures who navigated this area. People like Emanuel Swedenborg, the Swedenborgish philosopher turned Christian mystic from the late 1600s. There was also Anton Mesmer, the German physician and friend of Mozart, who theorized about quote-unquote animal magnetism, which stated that there was a superfine, invisible fluid in the body that could be amplified. More recently, there was the Poughkeepsie seer, Andrew Jackson Davis, who had revived interest in clairvoyance in New York. And interestingly enough, the hall that the table tipping class I took in Casadega is named after him. But these figures were all grown men, many of them well-educated. None of these figures were as underestimated or disrespected as a teenage girl, as ordinary seeming as Maggie Fox. After a lecture from the journalist who had chronicled the events at the Hydesville house, Eliab Capron, Maggie entered with Leah Fox, who was now claiming mediumship herself. To the shock of the audience, the spirit raps came. And the crowd was immediately split. Many were just as blown away as the people who'd come to the Hydesville house, but the skeptics organized quickly. When the demonstration was complete, and by all accounts, Maggie pulled it off, the audience grew restless and in the room demanded that there be a committee of five men assigned to investigate the phenomena and nominated them before they let anyone leave. The Foxes did not see this coming, understandably, but the newly formed committee demanded that the sisters submit themselves to testing the next morning, which they did at the Sons of Temperance Hall in Rochester the next day, with the committee declaring that there would be a second show at Corinthian Hall that night to reveal the results. This time, an even bigger crowd arrived. Capron published an account of night two along with a fellow journalist, so consider the source, they are biased in the Fox sisters' favor, but the long and short of it was that the committee had not been able to bust them, even after reportedly putting their hands on the feet and joints of the girls as the rappings took place. And that still wasn't enough. A second investigation was called for, followed by a third night of shows to indicate the results. This committee was even physically harsher on Maggie and Leah. Their feet were bound and their dresses were groped, while the committee demanded that the sisters summon the rappings. And again, the committee was unable to find fraud. So on the third night of shows, yet another committee was called for. And it's like, guys, it's 1848. We've got bigger fish to fry here. But this time, the committee called for would be only composed of women so that the Fox sisters could be physically humiliated even further. Barbara Weisberg describes the inspection like this. Quote, "With the sisters' reluctant consent, a subsidiary committee of ladies took them into a separate room, then stripped and searched them, examining both, quote, their persons and clothing, unquote, in search of noisy devices such as leaden balls. Mortified, both sisters wept through much of their ordeal, until their sobs reached such a pitch that Amy Post burst into the room and brought the investigation to a halt," unquote. Now, no matter how you feel, this is a fucking Guantanamo-style physical humiliation of two women, one of whom is a minor. Maggie did not want to return to Corinthian Hall after this abusive third investigation, but Amy Post convinced both her and Leah to attend in protest of how they'd been treated. And again, the committee found no fraud, and the Fox sisters, Kate included, were now considered legit enough to continue their work. But at what cost? Understandably freaked out by how the public had demanded to strip search them multiple days in a row, The sisters spent the next stretch of time perfecting their spirit rapping seances in Rochester in privately arranged sessions. An interesting shift here is that they now charged a fee for these seances. Frederick Douglass was said to frequently attend these. He once got so frustrated that it was taking so long for the ghosts to show up that he called the display atrocious and apologized to Amy Post about it in a letter written later. Good stuff. And yeah, that's a really funny story, but it lends itself to the predicament that the Foxes and the newly minted mediums who were beginning to crop up all around the country and even overseas found themselves in. People sitting with mediums wanted instant gratification. They wanted to talk to specific spirits. And in some cases, it seems like, more than anything else, they wanted a bit of a show. And depending on your perspective, no one could put on a show or a ritual quite like a spiritualist medium could.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep expert. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
All right, we're back in Casadega, in the Andrew Jackson Davis building. Yes, that Andrew Jackson Davis, the Poughkeepsie seer himself. Well spotted. Group after group are going up to the table in our table tipping class, and I feel so self-conscious waiting, again wondering if there's any chance that Lewis and Marie Gates already know who I am, and does that mean that they could just take a stab at who I would want to contact? That's a classic fraudulent medium technique. The hot reading, meaning that a medium would research who you are before they arrive and then miraculously bring through relevant information. Across the room and around the table, one old man connects with his father and surprises himself by starting to cry. Another woman comes in with a very specific agenda. She connects with her father's spirit and then launches into a hyper-specific line of questioning. She says she loves him and misses him, but she's still mad at him about that thing, and tells him on the table that she still doesn't forgive him. She then goes up a second time a little later on to speak with her mother's spirit and seems to connect, bursting into tears and asking if she was wrong not to forgive her father. It's intense. It's specific. It's technically cheaper than therapy. And then finally, it's my turn. I go up with a group and have a vague plan of what I'm going to do. Try to make contact with one of my dead grandmas and hope for the best. I'm pretty nervous at this point because not only is this something I very much want to believe in, I also feel very aware of wanting Louis and Marie to like me. I'm being appraised here to some extent, observed by the mediums of Casadega, and so I'm both interested and performing being interested. It's like being on a date, except the means to the end is the great beyond and the approval of a small community of aging mediums and healers. So we stand around the table, me right next to Louis. He's huge and feels huger when I'm next to him. And so when the table takes off, I kind of hope that it will all suddenly become clear. Something like, I knew it, he is dragging the table, or Marie is dragging the table. Something very obvious is going on. But it doesn't seem that way at all. And in fact, the Gateses seem to intentionally keep their touch on the table pretty light. But Louis narrates the experience like a sportscaster as the table takes off and leans to the mom across the table from me. Standing around the table is a completely immersive experience. It's nothing like watching from the perimeter. You smell everyone's smell, everyone's breath. You feel very self-conscious about how tightly or not tightly you're gripping the table. Like, am I dragging it? Am I a part of the problem? Are we confirmation biasing this table around, or is this real? But I don't have time to think about it because suddenly the table is tipping towards me. And so I start to speak to the dead. Are you a woman? Please say you're a woman. I don't know what to do if you're not a woman. The table goes still. That's a no. It's not a woman. I'm fucked. I'm so fucked. So I ask, is this not a woman? Because yes or no questions can be really gendered. But the table moves again. The answer is yes. It's a male spirit talking to me. A dead man? I'm pretty lucky. I haven't really lost many men in my life. Is it Papa? No. Is it Will? No. Fuck, I'm blowing it. No one has gotten this many no's in a row in the entire time this has been going on. So I panic and I ask, is this Matthew? And the table starts to nod yes. And that's really weird because I don't technically know Matthew. My mom had two miscarriages and we were raised to think of them as our siblings and to talk to them. Even our middle names are their names, Matt and Beth. And I used to like draw these weird pictures of what I thought my cool teenage siblings would look like if they were alive. They're not people I've actually met. They're kind of like these characters to me, I guess. But it made my parents feel better that we spoke life into an experience that had been so painful for them. But I ask, is this Matt? And the answer comes back as yes, which leads me to, what would I say to someone who I've never met and is mainly the object of my weird child fan fiction? So I think for a second and I ask, are you good? I sound like a total dumbass, but he says yes. The table rocks back and forth, and I swear to God, I'm not touching it. I ask, is he with Bethany? My other sibling who passed away. The answer is yes. Has he been watching me? Yes. And I feel Louis Gates' eyes on me, and he says, there's a man from your work here, too. He says you're funny. This kind of stops me in my tracks because this doesn't really track for me at all. I can't think of a man who I've worked with who's died that I'd be close enough with to say that I'm funny. But Louis Gates does know that I'm a comedian. You know, it's not inconceivable that he could be taking an educated guess on something that I would want to hear. But I shift my focus back to the table. I'm talking to Matt, and I'm really feeling the pressure to stick the landing on this conversation. But I can't think of anything, and I hear myself blurting out, were you upset about what Grandma did? And look, listener, what my grandma did or did not do is none of your business. but I was curious if I could communicate with him what he thought. But the table goes still. The answer is no. And Marie Gates looks at me and says, "They don't bring anger into the spirit realm. They really don't." And then the table takes off again. My turn is over, and my friend begins a stilted, nervous conversation with a grandfather she only met a few times as a kid. And that's my first experience speaking with the dead. Maybe. This session continues for 2 hours, and it's strange but not unpleasant. Except for this one moment that sticks out to me. A man who was sitting across the circle from me had a tearful yes or no conversation with his father about an hour before on the table. And he hadn't said much since, even as most of us were whispering with our friends or the regulars to the camp laugh and catch up with each other. But this guy has been keeping to himself, looking down at his hands that are kind of shaking. He wants to believe that he's talking to his dead father badly, but he clearly has doubts. And finally, he breaks and looks to Lewis and makes a proposition. He asks them, "Can the two of them get on the table one-on-one and have a conversation with his father?" He's half desperately wanting to make contact and half wanting to reassure himself that there is some chance that all of this might be real. He tells us all that he was with his father when he died and breaks down here for a minute because it was just a couple of weeks ago, then bounces back. He continues, saying his father was extremely Christian when he was alive, while he was more open to alternatives, like spiritualism. That's why he wanted the one-on-one on the table. He wanted to ask his dad what he thought about the afterlife and whether it squared with what he very firmly believed when he was alive. And now I'm watching like a sports commentator. Like, how is Lewis going to handle a request this direct? These interactions can be difficult to watch because here is a man who is clearly in pain and seeking out answers that could very well be unknowable. And it's one person's job, Lewis Gates, to assure us that they are knowable. Is this okay? I don't know. It depends on so many things, on if you believe in it, on if the person is profiting from it, which it doesn't seem really like this camp is, on whether the medium believes in what they are doing. Lewis deftly does not take the man up on the one-on-one table request. Instead, he says that there is a period of adjustment in the spirit realm in a way that almost sounds matrixy, but he says that people in spirit go to a place where they feel comfort and acceptance. He says it's possible that this guy's father is able to attend Christian ceremonies in the spirit realm, and enough time hasn't passed for the deceased dad to understand the real truth of what being in spirit is. The guy doesn't know what to say. He doesn't push Reverend Dr. Lewis further, and Lewis takes the opportunity to share a personal anecdote, revealing that his father was a Baptist priest who firmly believed in what he preached, and that his mother was a spiritualist, and that's whose path Lewis decided to follow. Lewis continued, saying that even in the spirit realm, his father retained his Baptist beliefs, but that they spoke together often. He even goes on walks in Casadega with his deceased father. And at this, the man seems comforted. Or maybe he's just stumped. And that's the whole class. Lewis releases us through the gift shop, but tells us before we go that you don't need to buy a lot of stuff to be a spiritualist. And actually, you shouldn't buy a lot of stuff to be a spiritualist. All you need is a couple of quartz crystals, he says, and a lot of practice. And then he laughs and he gestures to the door and says this:
"Buy whatever you want, though."
And we do. And so ends my journey in the art of Casadegan table tipping. After we leave, my friend wants to provide me with a true, authentic Floridian experience. So we get subs from Publix, which is a grocery store for the uninitiated. It's a go-to that she coaches me through ordering. And we sit and we talk about the tables. I ask her how she felt about the whole experience, and she says She isn't really sure what to believe, but she was deeply affected by the people who really felt they'd made a connection to a recently lost loved one, and expressed some embarrassment at asking her dead grandmother if she should text her ex again. It was like the table was screaming, "Don't do it!" And its legs like clattered to the ground. And it was incredible comedic timing on the part of Spirit or the table or Reverend Dr. Lewis or some kind of combination of the three. She had a good time, but she has no idea what to make of it. And I share the story of the Fox sisters with her. Because as I've been putting this show together, I find myself telling my family and friends the story of spiritualism pretty often, because that's what most religions are. It's a series of stories, stories you believe in, stories you attach moral significance to, and so on. But after a while of doing this, I realized that I was doing something a little bizarre. I was always sharing the same story, the story of the Fox sisters, the story of my experience in Casadega, but the way that I was framing it very much depended on the person I was talking to. The people I knew who had faith as a part of their lives, I tended to frame the story of the Fox sisters as a religious story, and they reacted to it with more reverence. But if I told this same story framed as something a little weird that got popular in the 19th century, also true, people reacted very, very differently. It was funnier. It was more bizarre. But it's the same exact story. So far, Ghost Church has been a lot of me taking you through my early experiences in spiritualism through my eyes. And to be quite honest, after this table tipping class, I found myself kind of struggling more than ever on how much I was willing to believe, which was a surprise to me. When I arrived in Casadega, I honestly thought I would become more and more secure in feeling connected with the spiritualist faith. But a couple days in, and I was very much struggling. And more than anything else, I wanted to know how the mediums who practice at the camp now were able to find faith like that. So next week, we're going to hear from four members of the Casadega community and get a feeling for how they became the modern spiritualists, as well as learn the tragic ending to the story of the Fox sisters, the first to be faithful to the religion. Or were they? Next week on Ghost Church. Ghost Church is a Cool Zone Media production created, written, and hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. Special thanks to Robert Evans for voicing the Reverend Dr. Lewis Gates. The show is produced by Sophie Lichterman, edited by Ian Johnson. Our theme song is by Speedy Ortiz, that's Sadie Dupuis, Andy Moholt, Audrey Z. Whitesides, and Joey Dubek. And music is by Zoe Blade.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Turns out, a delightfully clean home can make for a delightful start to the day. At Mrs. Meyer's, everything they make is inspired by the garden. With plant-derived and other thoughtfully chosen ingredients, their cleaning products smell like a dream and work like the Dickens, leaving your home sparkly clean and your to-do list tackled in no time. Goodness, there's no better feeling than that. Mrs. Meyer's, rooted in goodness. Visit MrsMeyers.com today.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.